presented a paper on Mormons and the German governments prior to World War I at most recent MHA, perennially intrigued by the foibles and quirks of history and humanity as a whole. Jesse has 30 minutes, and Mike has 15 minutes, and then after that there's 15 minutes for people to ask questions.
As you can tell, we wrote our own introductions and put our own little quirks into them. My father served an LDS mission in Germany from 1935 to 1938. I wondered what he thought about being there during Adolf Hitler's rise to power, and so I asked him in an oral history interview in 1981. He recalled his mother was actually very scared, but he was not very concerned. I thought it would be an interesting thing to do. I didn't have misgivings. I didn't know anything about Germany. I had heard of Hitler, but why and how and where I was called to serve a mission didn't make a difference. After he had been in Germany for a year, he told his parents, "You wrote that Brother Card was so worried about his son coming over here on a mission. You don't have to worry. If there was any danger, the missionaries would not be here. We are trying to do the work of the Lord, and as long as we do our duty, we haven't anything to worry about." He added in his interview, however, that missionary work was very difficult because Hitler was against all the churches, and he even referred to that time in Germany as the day of the Antichrist. Later, I discovered that not all missionaries shared my father's view of the Nazi regime. I was shocked when I interviewed former missionaries who compared some of Hitler's views with Mormon programs and claimed that Hitler had declared the Mormon Church and the National Socialist Party the two most perfect organizations on the earth. These comments piqued my interest, and I decided to examine Mormon missionaries' views of Hitler during the 1930s. Recognizing that this would be a limited research project, I focused on American missionaries. The views of LDS German missionaries and members would be another interesting paper. I found that Mormon missionaries from America had mixed feelings about Hitler. They received certain favors, but they are also limited in their work. They saw virtues in some of Hitler's arguments, but they also recognized weaknesses. But I found that Mormons were not unique, that other churches had the same responses. This paper will briefly explore the religious atmosphere in Nazi Germany and then focus on LDS American missionaries' views of Hitler. In 1933, Hitler declared, "The new state wants the church not to make a pliable tool of her, but because it knows where the foundation of a people are laid." In July 1933, he spoke in favor of a German nationalist church, but his comments backfired. The election did not go in his favor. He never aligned himself again with church politics, but he did continue to criticize religion. While many of his comments were negative, others held out a carrot of hope. For example, in 1936, Roy Wilker, who was the German-Austrian mission president, went with Elmer Peterson, an agricultural specialist visiting from Utah, to talk with government officials. They were told, quote, as soon as the churches were able to take care of the youth of Germany as they should, which up to now they had failed to do, the government would be willing to turn the care of the youth organizations over to the churches. A year later, though, in public, Hitler explained, "There is only one German people, and therefore there can be only one German youth. The new Reich will give its youth education and training to no one." The Catholic Church especially had mixed reactions to Hitler. Even at the time, and especially with hindsight, it appears that the Catholics sold out to Hitler in exchange for a few immediate favors. In 1933, Hitler signed a concordat with the Catholics, which allowed the church to maintain its properties as long as they were used for religious, charitable, or cultural activities. And Catholic youth were supposed to be allowed to attend church and do anything and not be required to do anything that was incompatible with their moral convictions. Some Catholic students even supported Hitler in the early 1930s, arguing, quote, "It's the destiny and the will of the Catholic Student Union to embody and disseminate the ideas of the Third Reich." Not all Catholics were so convinced, however, and they saw an immediate sellout. And these fears were later confirmed. As the Pope argued in 1937, "No one has the slightest intention of putting any obstacles in the way of the pursuit by the youth of Germany of loyalty to the fatherland. However, he who sings the allegiance to his earthly fatherland must not become a deserter and traitor by disloyalty to his God, his church, and the eternal fatherland." Because some Catholic priests spoke out against Hitler, they were arrested for what my father called moral indecencies. And as my father recalled in 1937, the Catholics were, quote, warned not to go about making any more statements against the German courts, or all the high officials would be made to answer a lot of questions that might prove embarrassing. My father summarized Hitler's views of religion. He said, most people in Germany were either Lutheran or Catholic. There was not much in between, and none of the churches were very strong because Hitler was against all the churches. He explained things were especially hard for smaller religious organizations. The Jehovah's Witnesses had been completely forbidden to hold meetings or do anything. The Seventh-day Adventists were having a struggle, and Hitler kicked the Freemasons out. Mormons, according to my father, were called a sect. A historian, Christine Elizabeth King, also listed the Mormons as a sect in her study and reported, by 1933, each sect found itself forced to clarify what survival meant for its members and what it as a group held dear and what it was prepared to sacrifice. Now, the Mormons learned to survive, but they also had to sacrifice. American missionaries were allowed to stay in Germany up until war broke out in 1933. And during the Hitler regime, in fact, the Mormons received some favorable press. After discussions between LDS church leaders, U.S. State Department officials, and the German government, American missionaries were allowed to use registered marks as long as they were purchased outside of the country. This privilege had been withdrawn in 1934, but was reinstated in 1936. And when my father wrote home to his parents, he explained what the registered marks meant to the missionaries. Yesterday, we received some very good news. The bank in Germany has given all of the missionaries permission to receive up to 200 marks a month in 100% registered marks. This permission permits us to get money around 4 marks to the dollar, where the ordinary exchange is only 2.5 marks to the dollar. This is a very nice of Germany, as before most of the missionaries were getting a very poor exchange. At the same time, though they were given some favors, missionary work was limited. In 1934, the police came to the mission office in Berlin and took the tract, Signs of the Great Apostasy. The elders were also told not to distribute the tract, Divine Authority. In 1935, James E. Talmage's book, Articles of Faith, was banned and copies were burned. And by 1937, missionary work was even limited more in some area. One missionary wrote to P.M. Kelly, who was the mission president in the Swiss-German mission in 1937, I'm very sorry I must bother you again. This morning, Brother Hansen, the branch president, arrived. He told us that he'd just come from the police and had been notified that missionary work in Kiel has now been strictly forbidden. After explaining that they could not invite people to meetings, they could not visit members or friends, he went on to say, as you see, there's not much work left in what we can do here since this is the entire providence. Because they had both successes and failures with the Nazis, the missionaries' views of Hitler and the Nationalist Socialist Party were both positive and negative. The positive views were based on rumors, which were passed among the Mormon missionaries and the members. Although these optimistic views of Hitler were misplaced, many of the missionaries believed them and used them in teaching the German people. Elmer Stettler, the son of Swiss immigrants in Logan, Utah, served a mission in Germany during the 1930s. He summarized those positive views. We liked Hitler. We would just eat up articles where some of his news people were showing how the pioneers were organized into groups. They were tying our LDS history into kicking the Germans out of their colonies in Africa. We used it as material to disseminate the gospel. Sanford Bingham, a missionary at the same time as my father, was impressed with Hitler as an orator. After hearing one speech, he wrote, I'm afraid if I stayed here a few more years, I would become completely Nazized myself. Roy Welker and his wife Elizabeth were especially influenced by Hitler. In an oral history interview, Mr. Welker recalled, my personal opinion was that Hitler was very much impressed with the LDS faith and church and its practices. And when Alfred A. Rees, who became the president of the East German Mission, was allowed to publish an article in a German paper, he saw this as a special favor from the German government. Missionaries talked about the positive changes that Hitler was making. P.M. Kelly recalled Hitler united the splintered country with 32 political parties after World War I with the slogan, One Government, One People, One Leader. Two missionaries from Provo wrote to their hometown paper appealing for a more tolerant view of Germany and praised the German people. They are doing a masterful piece of building due to the unity of purpose. Sanford Bingham elaborated on the same point. He wrote in his journal, Hitler has done a lot for this country, and he added in an oral history interview, That was the attitude of most of the missionaries, I think, after they'd been here for a while and got used to the restrictions. They thought, my, everything's cleaned up. The streets are clean. There are no street women walking the streets. Everyone is busy. Elizabeth Welker told Americans after she returned from Germany, you may hate Hitler, but you have to acknowledge that he is doing things. Using the positive comments about Hitler revolved around similarities between Nazis and the Mormon programs. According to Sanford Bingham, the missionaries had the impression that we were a favored church in Germany because the missionaries had conversed with Hitler and that his buddy in the First World War was an LDS. Stories were frequently told among the missionaries that elements of Mormonism started appearing in the Nazi government shortly after the Mormon tracts were confiscated. And another version of the story was that all the top German officials had received copies of the Book of Mormon and Hitler had read his. The Mormon comparisons were reinforced by articles in Mormon newspapers and magazines. According to one, quote, a number of interesting parallels can be seen between the church and some of the ideas and policies of the National Socialists. The similarities between Mormons and Hitlers range from views of the family, the importance of marriage, the strength of the educational system, the courage of the Mormon pioneers, the value of the word of wisdom, the need for a fast day to help the poor, the role of youth programs, and the worth of genealogy. Reese's article in the German newspaper in 1939 played on these similarities. After describing how the Mormons were forced to move to Utah, Reese concluded, the bitter historical experience has produced out of the Mormons a determined, practical people, as a result of which they perhaps better than any other can appreciate what the German people endured as they passed through their hardships. He went on to talk about the Mormons' fast day, the word of wisdom, and the tithing system. Although there is no evidence the Nazis borrowed their ideas from the Mormons, it is interesting to note how these comparisons were made. According to historian King, more than any of the other sects, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was able to stress areas of similarity between the practices and those promoted by the new regime, nor were they slow to do so. Classic examples are the fast day, in quotes, and genealogy. Fred Durst Sr. described the fast day. The first of every month, he initiated the one-pot meal. That is, one pot with everything cooked together. Everyone got the same thing, and the Hitler youth would go around with their cans and would collect 10 pfennigs from each person. Roy Welker recalled, I felt that this fast day that he established, and that's what it amounted to in the contributions for aiding the poor and so forth, he borrowed from the church. Dale Clark published an article in the Deseret News which referred to the fast day as a well-organized campaign designed not only to alleviate the acute poverty, but to develop that spirit of sacrifice that's so being stressed in the New Germany, and also of creating a spirit of unity and brotherhood. And an article in the Millennial Star compared the Mormon fast day to the German plan. The article concluded, "It's indeed singular that a comparison of the details of the two systems of organized fastings shows them to be nearly identical. Perhaps that part of the message of the restored gospel may have been directly or indirectly the inspiration of the model for the new scheme adopted by the German government. Perhaps not. But evidence at least is the fact that consciously or unconsciously, the people of the world are discovering that the Lord's way is best. The leaven of the gospel is spreading." With Hitler's attempt to create a superior race, Mormons were encouraged to do genealogy. In 1934, a professor at the University of Berlin invited Roy Welker to discuss genealogy. And according to Welker, the professor paid high tribute to the Mormons, stating that they understood the work of genealogy better than any other group on earth. In an article by James M. Kirkham in the Church News, he praised the Nazis' willingness to seek out their ancestors. Mr. Hitler, through government agents, is helping the Germans find their ancestors. And since a German had to prove that he's a pure German for at least four generations or back until 1800, Mormons were encouraged rather than discouraged from using government records. And Welker was especially surprised when the Mormons were asked to do a radio broadcast on genealogy in 1935. Promoting genealogy was part of Hitler's attempt to create a superior race, and some missionaries saw virtue in that plan. Elizabeth Welker even justified his treatment of Jews, since they had, quote, too much of the world's wealth, and other studies showed that Jewish blood was undesirable. She concluded that the Nazi views of Jews may be wrong, but they are certainly sincere, adding, whatever the Germans did to the Jews, they did not lynch them like America does the Negro. P. P.M. Kelly also reported the Jewish situation in Germany when he returned from his mission. Pointing to the racial problems in the United States and the extreme poverty amidst great wealth, Kelly said the Americans should not be too hard on the Germans. They were not free from guilt, he explained, but Americans, quote, needed to see Germany from the German point of view. Elizabeth Welker also praised the German youth programs. In an article in the Improvement Era, she praised, quote, this is the title of the article, "The German Girl of Today, who has the most wholesome outlook on life and is playing her part in the program of her country to develop a superior race." She added that the German girls were not too weight conscious, they knew the value of eating a good diet, and they recognized that tobacco had no food value. And German girls also worked hard and exercised regularly. With time, some missionaries recognized some of